and welcome to Worlds Apart. The popular demand for a masculine leader reclaiming the initiative, common sense, and national pride appeared long before Donald Trump took his oath of office. In fact, in some countries, it already reached its apogee, producing a long line of geopolitical titans, from Modi to Putin to Xi. How is the arrival of Donald Trump changing big men's politics? Well, to discuss that, I'm now joined by Abdul Basit, Pakistan's former High Commissioner to India and former ambassador to Germany. Ambassador, it's a great privilege to talk to you. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much for having me.
Now, it's become very common to discuss Donald Trump's somewhat unpredictable style. And yet, if we look at what he said 20, 30, 40 years ago, he seems to be very consistent in his views and his approaches. And my guess is that it's because they served him pretty well. He was just elected the American president for the second time. Do you think this approach, though, will benefit American people to the same extent? And most importantly, our part of the world, the Eurasia?
I think the jury is still out, and I would not like to jump the gun. Because he still has 4 years, and we would see, as far as I'm concerned, I can see that there would be seismic changes. We may not even understand those changes initially. But what will finally, how things pan out eventually, I think it is too early to see, because on the one hand, he is trying to reach out to Russia. He is perhaps also trying to reach out to China. On the other hand, his U.S. NATO allies, European allies, they are feeling as being dished by him. So we still do not know.
Well, he definitely brings some new energy and some new worldview to global politics. Do you think there is a need, there was a need at least, for disruption of a status quo? Do you think global politics needed, you know, some new...
Disruption is good to a certain extent, I would say, because we were living in an era or with international institutions which have lost their utility for long, I would say. The UN Security Council has become totally ineffective, in my view, because it has not been able to prevent conflicts around the world. So I think there is a need to revisit the drawing board. But how you address the challenges, that is the key. Whether you address it by taking all the people, all the countries along, or you disrupt things unilaterally. If you do it unilaterally, then there are obviously consequences, long-term implications. And I think we would all like not to see disruption bringing about far-reaching negative consequences for the world as a whole.
Well, I mean, so far we've seen Trump approaching these issues by simply stopping the financing, for example, of the USAID. And you've written recently in one of the articles that the world is facing a myriad of challenges, but many of those challenges are sort of artificially imposed onto other countries, like the issue of transgenderism, you know, funding all sorts of liberally disruptive NGOs. I know some of them in Pakistan, some of the organizations in Pakistan had some jihadi ties or alleged to have some jihadi ties. So isn't there a value in, you know, bringing some American mercantilism here, at least in stopping the financing of the causes that disrupt situation on the ground?
No, I do see the positive sides of that as well. For example, as you mentioned, the issue of transgenderism or LGBTQ, whatever it is called, they're not in sync with Pakistan's cultural ethos, to put it mildly. So we would like to see an end to these such kind of, you know, financing to NGOs or funding of such organizations in Pakistan. But on the other hand, when you talk about global issues, I think there would be many issues on which Pakistan may see eye to eye with the Trump administration's worldview.
Now, you wrote in one of your articles that those in the business of diplomacy know full well that when a country is not peaceful with itself, It must not expect to achieve sustainable positive results, let alone miracles abroad. And you were commenting here on Pakistan's foreign policy. If we compress this very eloquent paragraph to two words, wouldn't it sound like Pakistan first?
Yeah, definitely. And Pakistan is not a sui generis country in the sense that all countries pursue their national interests. All countries do try to increase their global, regional, global clout, whether it is Pakistan or whether it is India or any other country for that matter. So Pakistan, if Pakistan were to fully realize its foreign policy objectives as defined in terms of its national interests, I think, as someone very rightly once said, that the first principle of good foreign policy is good government at home or good governance at home. So I think it is still true for any country, for that matter. If you are if you do not have good governance at home, you cannot expect to achieve miracles abroad. It is as simple as that.
I'll try to be very diplomatic here, but what do you think has prevented Pakistan so far from, if not being the best version of itself, then being realistically good enough version of itself domestically?
I think domestically we continue to have this political unpredictability in our system. And then obviously to a certain extent, civil-military relations have not been on the even keel, and they have caused problems in the past. So as a Pakistani, I would wish that we do have some predictability in our political system.
Are you expecting that to change now? Because one of the reasons why the civil-military relationship has been somewhat strained was also because of the foreign meddling. I mean, it's easy to apply pressure on the country through not very transparent institutions. Do you expect that to change now that Trump says to everybody, both his friends and allies, that you're on your own, you know, deal with it yourself? Do you think the Pakistani elites are likely to sort of turn inwards more consistently?
I do not see that happening anytime soon, frankly speaking, because our political parties, unfortunately, are not democratic. So we lack intra-party democracy in the country. So unless parties themselves get democratic, I do not see how we can, or democracy can take roots in Pakistan. So this problem will continue for some more time to come. That is correct that with Mr. Trump in the White House, we may not see those international pressures on our political system. Whether it is good for Pakistan or bad for Pakistan, I do not know. But having said everything, I still strongly believe that predictability in the political system, whether it is democratic, authoritarian, or whatever the system is, it is important that people should be able to predict about it. In the case of Pakistan, we have not been sure about our political system, whether a democratic government will last for 3 years, 4 years, when will we have elections. So that kind of uncertainties has caused much damage to Pakistan, in my view.
I want to touch on a very sensitive issue, but I think you perhaps would agree with me that there was a leader similar in terms of the size of charisma in Pakistan a couple of years back. I'm talking about the former Prime Minister Imran Khan, who, by the way, met with and worked with Trump during his first term. And he was very eloquent about sovereignty, about self-sufficiency. He tried to take Pakistan on a somewhat different course, but that experiment didn't last long. I have two questions on that. First of all, do you think that the Pakistani elites will still have to consider this issue of sovereignty, or at least the degree of sovereignty to which they want to commit themselves? Because it's widely speculated that the political fate of Imran Khan was decided not only in Islamabad, but also somewhat, to some extent, in Washington.
Absolute sovereignty is an elusive concept.
Well, but the degree of it...
Yes. All countries do try to protect their sovereignty to the extent possible. But we all concede our sovereignty in different ways. All states do that. But when it comes to, our former prime minister, I think He was not the only prime minister who visited Russia, but obviously, given the backdrop or given the context of that visit, it kind of backfired for no good reason, in my view.
For no good reason for him or for Pakistan more generally?
For him, I would say, because Pakistan continues to be not to be taking very strong positions on the Ukraine war as such. We have been treading very cautiously, and rightly so, because we do understand the Russian concerns, and we also understand the viewpoint put forth by President Zelensky. But we would strongly feel that this issue needs to be resolved. And let's hope that this meeting taking place in Riyadh would help push the process in that direction.
Now, given that Trump is back in office and the approach he espouses also gets more prominence on the global stage, do you expect any changes in the fate of Imran Khan personally? Do you think there may be some, I don't know, if not the pressure, then at least advisory coming from Washington?
I don't think so. Though people here in Pakistan, at least who are his supporters, they're very jubilant, they're upbeat about it, that perhaps President Trump may build some pressure on the government of Pakistan to release him or to free him or let him go abroad, that kind of stuff. But I am not seeing any pressure being built on Pakistan by Washington, because it's a non-issue for them, frankly speaking. It's a non-issue as far as President Trump is concerned.
Do you think that would be a good development for your own country? Because in my conversations, unofficial conversations with the younger generation, I can certainly see that they saw in him somebody who could represent the cosmopolitan image of a Pakistani, somebody who is, very well acquainted with the sort of ways of the world, but also has a vision for the country. I'm not arguing for Mr. Khan personally, but do you think that kind of charismatic politician could lead Pakistan towards something more defined?
It goes without saying, he remains, I think, by all accounts, the most popular politician in Pakistan. That goes without saying. And if he is released and if he is allowed to be mainstreamed again in politics, that will be good for Pakistan in the long run, because his arrest or whatever cases he is facing, that is a kind of drag on Pakistan's political system. And we need to get out of this quagmire, political quagmire, which we are facing today. So I think there are no two views about it.
Okay, well, Ambassador, we have to take a very short break right now, but we will be back in just a few moments. Stay tuned.
There's no end in sight over how you're going to continue to destroy the earth.
It's the case of the madness of the people.
I tried to go to the gym, but I'm certainly not ready to fight Russia.
This is all so absurd.
This is third world lunacy. Brainwashing.
As Ursula von der Leyen likes to say, we have the tools.
Why don't we just start with stability and business deals?
What planet are we living on now?
We have very good propaganda in our press here in Europe.
I think we don't know the aftermath.
Anytime that you're not allowed to ask questions, you should ask all of the questions.
The more questions asked, the better the answers will be.
Welcome back to Worlds Apart with Abdul Basit, Pakistan's former High Commissioner to India and former ambassador to Germany. Ambassador, before the break, we touched on sovereignty, and such concept as sovereignty is intrinsically linked to security. And it's very easy to, undermine one by messing with the other, which I think we would both agree Americans have done a lot in this neighborhood, at least over the last couple of decades. The Trump administration made it clear that they don't want to spend money on this anymore. Do you think that gives the Pakistani elite some breathing room in this regard, at least for the next 4 years? Do you think they will change they will use this window of opportunity of sort of becoming more self-defined in this regard.
Oh, it can work that way, and I hope that it works that way, because our dependence on foreign aid, foreign assistance, IMF assistance is limiting our sovereignty in different ways. Hopefully we also look inwards and try to fix our the economic mess we have created for ourselves. And unless we do progress economically, it will continue to be very difficult for us to have a space globally, or to have a space for our to pursue our national foreign policy objectives. So it's a paradoxical situation, frankly speaking. It can work both ways. But I hope that our dependence on foreign assistance reduces with the passage of time. And President Trump, you know, expressing apprehensions against USAID and so on and so forth, I think it can work to our advantage at some stage.
I don't want my question to sound offensive, but I wonder if Pakistan is ready for that, because at least in Russia's experience, over the last couple of years, at least, it's become very clear that you first need to define, you know, the key objectives of your policy, both domestically and internationally, and they then pursue the course even under the pressure and take the cost of, doing what you decided to do for yourself. And my impression has been that Pakistan wants to be sovereign, but it also wants to be very friendly with certain important nations. Do you think there is readiness, I guess, or resolve substantial enough among the ruling elites for that kind of striking out on your own?
No. Elite in any country is always believes in the status quo, because many perks and privileges, their status, their position is closely linked to that status quo. So I'm not really worried. I mean, to a certain extent, one should be worried about the elite. But they can, in the process, the way our world is working today, what I see in the context of Pakistan is that in most cases, we continue to hum and haw. At times, I feel that while our mind is, we are very clear about our long-term strategic partnership with China. On the other hand, some of us strongly believe in our heart that, the U.S., our relationship with U.S. is very important. So we are kind of, swinging like a pendulum. But I think with President Trump in the White House, this clarity now should come to Pakistani elite, that where our interests lie, how we can promote our political, security, economic interests in a holistic way. Because you cannot isolate these issues in compartments and then try to deal with them. We need to have a holistic approach, a comprehensive approach. And then, unfortunately, today, I do not see that approach in place.
Well, it's still very early, even though the American administration is moving very decisively. And possibly there could be also some geopolitical incentives. You wrote recently that the Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi is the only incumbent leader in South Asia that Trump has met and worked with during his first term in office. And you even characterized their relationship as bonhomie. Do you expect any changes in the U.S.-Indian dynamic, and what would it mean for Pakistan?
At least in the case of India, I do find that the bipartisanship is still holding in the U.S. because the Biden administration was very clear to continue nurturing their strategic partnership with India. Similarly, Mr. Trump is also is wedded to that position. So to that extent, Pakistan should worry because their strategic partnership would continue to thrive in the years to come. The question is how Pakistan can best serve its own interests. We need to further inject more and more substance into our relations with China, reach out to Russia and add some more substance to this relationship, and also look around our region. So it's, in diplomacy, it's never a zero-sum game. despite the fact that U.S. would have a strategic partnership with India at the cost of Pakistan, because many things would impinge on our interests directly. But we would still have a space. The fact of the matter is that we still have close to 1 million Pakistani Americans living in the U.S. So they can provide a kind of living bridge between Pakistan and India. So even if we have a transactional relationship, I think Pakistan, if we were to embark on an effective diplomacy, we can still have a space to protect our interests vis-a-vis the U.S.
Do you think negotiating with the Trump administration requires any sort of change or adjustment of a diplomatic language? How do you talk to Trump and his people in order to be effective with them?
It all depends whether you're talking to Mr. Trump directly or to his people in his administration. But if I were in the decision making, first of all, my first thing would be to mobilize Pakistani Americans living in the U.S. because the way their system works, you cannot simply ignore your diaspora there. So you have to work through them and see as to how we can bring the U.S., I'm not saying to our side, but at least to make them understand our legitimate, justified concerns vis-a-vis whatever is happening in our region.
You wrote that Pakistan should worry about open U.S. support to India in Kashmir. What led you to that conclusion, and what do you think Trump can gain from siding more openly with India on this issue?
That would also hinge on how China-U.S. relations evolve during the next 4 years. Because if China and U.S. get along well, then that would limit India's space to kind of, you know, exploit or extract more and more from the U.S. I have no doubt that even during the first Trump administration, though he did say that he was willing to mediate between Pakistan and India on the Kashmir dispute, but that was simply rhetoric in my view. And the U.S. policy is very clear that Pakistan and India should be talking to each other bilaterally and settling this issue. And we know for a fact that India is not interested in talking to us on Jammu and Kashmir. But in order to further oblige India, Trump can go to any extent. What he is saying on Gaza and Palestine, that should be a kind of, you know, a reason enough for us to worry about the Jammu and Kashmir dispute as well, because he's a man who believes in a quid pro quo, in transactions, in making deals. So since the fact is that he sees India through that prism, and Pakistan does not really appear on his priority list, unfortunately or fortunately.
Now, I don't want to draw direct comparisons, but I do know that India and Pakistan's approaches to the Kashmir issue have been different, and Pakistan's tends to be more straightforward. It wants to go directly to the issues, while the Indians are more sort of, let's develop trade and, you know, build trust. And I wonder if there is indeed a danger for Pakistan in maintaining this somewhat aggrieved position, because as we saw, for example, in the case with the Palestinians, you know, biding time seems to be on the side of Israelis at this point of time. And with Trump's backing of Netanyahu's policies, it's pretty unclear what the Palestinian question could look like in a couple of years.
At the end of the day, it would all depend on what Kashmiris want, frankly speaking. If Kashmiris are happy the way things are, then I do not see Kashmir dispute going anywhere. But, you know, as for your remarks about CBMs, confidence building measures, and Pakistan's approach towards the dispute, we have tried all these approaches and nothing really worked. And now the question is how to move forward now that India has annexed the Jammu and Kashmir territory.
And says it's a closed case for now.
Closed case, that is their integral
part. Do you believe that to be a closed case?
I do not believe, because I have been of the view that no matter how many billions India is going to spend in the occupied Jammu and Kashmir, the hearts and minds of the people of Jammu and Kashmir are not going to change. They do want their right to self-determination, as the people of Palestine for that matter. So these two issues need to be resolved. The Palestinian issue needs to be resolved in order to have durable peace in the Middle East. And if we were to have durable peace and long-lasting peace in South Asia, I personally feel that without settling this dispute, we do not have any future. Pakistan and India cannot have a normal relationship unless this dispute is resolved.
Now, which side benefits or rather suffers more from not having a normal relationship? Can India develop?
I think both sides. As a matter of fact, the entire region is suffering. For example, the South Asian Association for Regional Cooperation, SARC, which was founded back in 1985, has not been able to realize its full potential only because it has become hostage to Pakistan-India hostility. Intra-regional trade in South Asia is less than 4%. You look at European Union, ASEAN for that matter, where intra-regional trade is 30 to 40%. So both, and then if India were to realize its global aspirations, for example, hypothetically speaking, if India wants to become a permanent member of the United Nations Security Council, how can on earth one think of, you know, giving that role to India if there is no regional consensus? Now it is having problems not only with Pakistan, but also with Bangladesh, with the Maldives, with Nepal, with Sri Lanka, and so on and so forth, and with China for that matter. So India needs to come down from its hubristic position and needs to think realistically. It can have a strategic partnership with the U.S. to counter China or to have more space vis-a-vis Russia. I do not know. But I think if this region, we want to put this region on a trajectory towards peace and prosperity, India as a bigger country needs to be realistic in this region.
You mentioned that the old solutions have not worked. Can you imagine, or can perhaps somebody in Washington now imagine a new idea, a new scenario that would get this issue out of the stalemate? Because for the time being, what you're saying, it's very logical, and yet it seems to be...
I agree with you. I do not see any appetite in Washington, D.C. to push the two countries towards settling this dispute. I think President Trump's platter is full.
Do you think that would be helpful, though?
It would not be helpful. We still want the international community to help the two countries, to nudge them towards settling this dispute. As per the aspirations of the people of Jammu and Kashmir, I'm not saying that we... it cannot be settled unilaterally. I'm clear about that. No matter whatever India does or whatever Pakistan does, it would not really help the situation on the ground, because Kashmiris do want their right to self-determination. So I do not really know, and I'm not sure if President Trump would be interested to come to our rescue here.
Well, perhaps if he settles the Gaza issue the way wants, maybe he will suggest turning Kashmir into a Riviera.
But I hope that he would not ask Kashmiris to leave the Jammu and Kashmir region, because it's a non-starter in any case.
Well, that we will have to discuss in some other time. But for the time being, thank you very much for being with us.
You're most welcome. Thank you very much for having us again. Thank you very much.
And thank you for watching. Hope to see you again on Worlds Apart.